The Saskatchewan Healthcare Coalition is hosting the All for Public Healthcare Rally in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, May 4th. It's free and you're invited. This rally is happening because our public healthcare system does not have the support it needs to meet the diverse needs of all Saskatchewan residents. For years, it has been underfunded, ignored, and hindered, so join Donna and I in person on May 4th in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan for a walk, speeches, networking, and community building. Link for more information is in the show notes. Hope to see you there. It's been a while since I got to have a conversation about the Narcotics Anonymous program here on the show. In this episode, I had Daniel Petros in the studio. With 18 years in recovery, he largely credits the program for the life he lives today. From hopelessly addicted to crack to the chef, restaurateur, and entrepreneur he is today, Daniel has a pile of useful insights into that old NA recovery. But before we bring him in, what's up? My name's Dan, podcaster, keynote speaker, and advocate, and this is Hard Knocks Talks, your addictions podcast. Now, let's get into this talk with Daniel P.
This is Hard Knocks Talks.
What's up, Daniel?
What's up, Daniel?
Yes, yes. I've never had another Daniel.
Appreciate you having me here, bro.
Yeah, of course.
It's a pleasure and an honor and a privilege to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and likewise, it's good to have you because I got sober in 2017 and then I met Daniel.
You know? Yeah, that's when I met. I just was asking you a few moments ago when we met. And yeah, I remember you coming in and remember you coming in with your little son.
Yeah, He's not so little anymore. He's almost as big as Donna now.
He's probably taller than me.
Yeah, and if you remember, I was probably really angry at Donna at that time, too.
Yeah, everybody remembers that about me.
Oh, that was that murderous guy.
Yeah. We were all angry at the beginning.
Yeah, oh, man. That's the truth.
Yeah.
So you've been in recovery for how long now?
Well, actually, today is what, March 5th?
Yes.
So 2 days ago, March 3rd of this year, was my 18 years clean and sober date. So I cleaned up on March 3rd, 2006 was my first day living in recovery. Mm. Yeah.
Beautiful. It's sometimes far and few between. I go through stints on the show here where it'll be like a long time before I have like a between program people.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of other ways. And if the show has taught me anything is that there's other ways that people can get sober and have fulfilling lives.
Absolutely.
But I know that you are well versed and you're comfortable talking about it, correct?
100%. 100%.
Okay. I didn't ask you that before the show. So where are you at on anonymity?
No. Honestly, it's, I've gone public, as far as social media is concerned, you know, anybody in my life knows I'm in recovery, right? Anybody who has any semblance of a relationship with me, in all walks of life, be it, you know, my family, my friends, people that I do business with, most people know that I'm in recovery.
Yeah.
But as far as announcing it in a public setting, like I've never really been on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I do have an Instagram account, which is pretty active. I embraced Instagram quite willingly in 2017.
Yeah.
And it was actually my 16-year anniversary when I turned 16 that I announced it publicly on that platform.
So is with 18 years under your belt, is it still about staying sober? Like, do you wake up every morning and say, I have to stay sober today?
No.
Yeah.
No, it's, you know, the obsession was lifted a long time ago to use.
Yeah.
You know, what I've learned over my time in recovery, and I'm still very active in the recovery community. I still attend a lot of meetings.
Uh-huh.
I still sponsor. I have a sponsor. You know, I do a lot of work that we're asked to do when we get here on a continuum because I know that that's what works, right?
Yeah.
And but as far as the struggle with using or thinking about using, honestly, I'm very, very blessed that I don't struggle with the idea of staying clean and sober. The idea of using has actually become a repulsion. And so I count that as a massive blessing, but I also know I can't take that for granted because that's true today.
Yeah.
I don't know what's coming down the pipe.
Yeah.
I don't know what's coming down in the future, but the truth is I've seen a lot of people that have less clean time, more clean time than me, that have relapsed.
Think they can go out for one.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's the one lie I haven't permitted myself to tell myself.
You know, and I've heard that, you know, and before the show, we were talking about the voices, right? You're saying, where did you come up with this idea? And I said, a voice that sounded just like mine told me, you know, and that goes to higher power and source energy or whatever you choose to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have had a voice similar to that just offer the suggestion, hey, why don't you think about maybe being able to have one, you know? And it was, it's never sounded like a good idea to me, you know? Yeah. So, and maybe I take that for granted because I know where it took me when I did. I remember there was a time where it was like, I need to quit this shit, but I'm going to do it tomorrow. Mm. You know, it was a twisted sense of just for today. Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I can relate to all of that. And, yeah. And I think honestly, in, for me anyways, this is my truth. I credit it to being connected to the program mm-hmm. in a very real way on a continuum basis
yeah.
where that voice is unabated, right? Because if I step away, mm-hmm. if I remove myself from the very thing that has, that removed that problem for me and that has given me the life that I have today, mm-hmm. Which has been the antidote to that strong, powerful of it, voice of addiction, mm-hmm. which at a certain point in my life, I was completely powerless against.
Yeah.
If I don't stray close to the source,
yeah.
to my higher power,
yeah.
to remind me and to keep working and living in the solution, then I know there's a possibility for that to be amplified.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And I think there's a direct correlation between that voice almost being non-audible, non-existent,
yeah.
and my connection to my higher power, which for me, the most direct source is through the program
yeah.
and the people that are in it.
Yeah. So something I've noticed in my own recovery, now I've just took 7 years in February, and I've known this for a long time, and I do believe that some of the successes in my life can be accredited to that compulsion. It takes on different forms, right? It can be social media, which I struggle with to this day, and it's very difficult for me because this is, you know, my livelihood. So all that to say, the obsession can manifest in different ways.
Absolutely.
Now, are you finding that you're needing to go elsewhere to handle obsessions of different behaviors? Like you're a restaurateur and a chef and an entrepreneur. And it has been said before that, you know, alcoholics or addicts in recovery, they're amongst the best businessmen in the world or business people in the world because we have that obsession. We just kind of learn to point it in a productive direction.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts around that?
What's first of all, congratulations on 7 years.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's massive. And every day clean and sober has to be celebrated, yeah. right? It has to be celebrated,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, and also just witnessing you doing something productive and creative
mm-hmm.
like this podcast and having conversations and taking the conversations outside of the rooms.
Yeah.
Letting people know that there's a solution out of that obsession.
Yeah.
Needs to be commended as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to your point, yeah, the, you know, although the drink and the drug was removed, the problem exists in the first step, which we know about.
Yeah.
Right?
Explain but, for anyone who might not know, like, let's not assume.
You know, the first step says we were powerless over our addiction that our life had become, our lives had become unmanageable.
Yeah.
And the key word there for me is the collective, we. Not one single step says it doesn't say I admitted I was powerless over addiction and that my life had become unmanageable.
Mm-hmm.
It says we admitted we were powerless over our addiction and that our lives had become unmanageable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a collective consciousness that I'm tapping into.
Yeah.
It's a collective solution that I'm tapping into.
Yeah.
It's a collective spiritual power that I'm tapping into
mm-hmm.
because the disease of addiction by its very nature creates isolation.
Segregation
separates me from self,
yep.
my family, my yep. community, and who my higher power destined for me to be.
Yeah,
you know. So the drink and the drug is gone. Step one.
Yeah.
What's left?
Yeah.
The obsessive, self-centered, self-involved individual. Yeah. The problem is me. So although I have gained
mm-hmm.
a tremendous set of tools, spiritual tools by working the 12 steps
yeah.
through the support and guidance of people outside of myself,
yeah.
mainly what we refer to as a sponsor in the program and the literature that exists there.
Yeah.
And again, that collective fellowship, that we that I got to tap into, that I'm a member of a wisdom tradition mm-hmm. and a community that's very fast and vast and available for me anywhere I go.
Yeah.
So that being said, unless I'm working at really sort of continuously and progressively, you know, in a committed way to battling that obsessive part of myself, because we have parts of us that are not ideal. We have parts of us that are really good, but we continuously need to work on them. So obsession for me, for example, shopping.
Yeah.
Like, I like nice things.
You're always looking tight, man.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, I like nice things.
Yeah.
And I'm not ashamed of that.
No.
And I don't apologize for it.
No.
But
yeah,
I'm also a guy who has owned 650 pairs of shoes.
Whoa.
Right?
That's a lot of shoes.
That's a lot of shoes.
That's like problematic. Like that's I bet you your rent is more because you had to get a piece big enough to accommodate your shoes.
So, you know, and that transpired, that the majority of that, specifically that obsession,
yeah,
happened in a 5-year gap where I was not connected to the fellowship,
okay,
where I wasn't going to meetings, where I was not talking to my sponsor, where I wasn't working with other addicts.
Yeah.
And I was busy chasing life and catching up on life.
Yeah.
But I, and literally the only time I went to a meeting in those 5 years was when I was feeling like shit.
Yeah.
So I wasn't connected to the source, to the very solution. Mm-hmm. So obsession showed itself in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Materialistically is one of them.
Yeah. Professionally?
Professionally. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Professionally.
That's how it's manifested for me. Absolutely.
And you're right. As a chef,
yeah,
you know, outside of recovery in my family and nature,
yeah,
cooking is my single biggest passion.
Yeah.
I can lose myself in it.
Yeah.
So there is a positive to that because you're right. The one thing that has happened in recovery is that I've been able to use that obsession, my self-drive, ambition.
That motivation to feel better. That's all it is.
In a positive way.
Yeah. Yeah. Productive way.
But it does have its pitfalls.
Yeah.
A degree of perfectionism can come into that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure you can relate to that.
Look around, man.
Right?
Yeah.
So to this day and speaking with you sitting here today, yeah, like I've struggled with pornography in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this disease is insidious. It's progressive.
Yeah.
It's incurable.
Yeah.
Right? The amount of serenity I have today is contingent on my spiritual fitness, which means I can never lose sight of doing all the things that I was asked to do in order to create a psychic change, a change in the way I think.
Mm-hmm. Like change, fundamentally.
Fundamentally.
The kind of thinking where you don't have to think about changing your thinking. It's just there.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and there's a quote from the Big Book that says, what used to be the occasional thought or hunch becomes inspiration, becomes a working part of the mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
What you once thought was impossible.
Right?
Man,
but I have to continually feed that.
Yeah.
I have to continually feed that because unless I'm living in the solution.
Yeah.
The old me, that I've had so much help to change, and I didn't do this alone.
Mm-hmm.
I've had so many people help me on this journey.
Full community, I'm sure.
A full community, in many different ways.
Yeah,
I have to continue, you know, to try to have a level of honesty, humility, and willingness to take outside help.
You know, my friend, do you know Rand Teed? Do you know the name Rand Teed?
No.
He's a old school recovery guy. I tell him, Rand, your rock bottom was when the asteroid took out the dinosaurs. But something that he said, he was just in the studio a little while ago talking about something else, drug policy stuff. And he said, recovery is like walking up the down escalator.
Mm.
You got to keep going or else it's going to take you back down.
100%. That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
I totally get that.
Yeah, yeah.
I totally get it.
So what brought you into recovery? Like, tell us a little bit about the life before you made the decision.
Whew, what got me into recovery? Yeah, I'll go back a little bit, not too much. I don't like to talk about the past, not because I'm ashamed of it, but we all know that addiction and living in active addiction is we all have our version of that horror.
Yeah, we do.
We all have different levels of what we consider rock bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
What mine can be different from yours,
but
we suffer from the same disease, but we also have a solution.
Yeah.
And so for me, ultimately, you know, in the last 3 to 4 years especially, I lived in a constant state of fear. I was imprisoned by my own shame, guilt. Shame and guilt were pervasive emotional bars in my life. And so, yeah, you know, 21 charges pending, massive amount of child support due. I hadn't seen my daughter for 6 years, mm-hmm. completely ostracized and estranged from my family, who, despite all of those conditions, were still there for me.
Yeah.
They used to come to Calgary to look for me.
Yeah.
My brothers, my dad, along with other relatives on the streets there,
mm-hmm.
while I was hopelessly lost in the world of addiction to crack cocaine, which was, you know, it wasn't about that drug, but in the end, that drug stripped all the lies bare.
Yeah.
Right? I had managed to juggle a life.
Yeah.
Up until that came into the picture, and it just took everything so fast that from this perspective and in being in the last 18 years, I look at that as a blessing because I could have gone drinking and doing all that other shit.
Yeah.
Probably for another 10, 15 years to end up in the same place.
So it got you where you needed to be.
In a hurry.
Do you ever have any sort of like sort of twisted kind of respect for that?
I do. It's not twisted at all.
Okay.
Because number one, I look at it as a blessing because it didn't kill me.
Mm-hmm.
And that cannot be understated because it's taken the lives of so many that I used to be in that life with.
And there's more coming.
Way more.
Yeah.
So it's not really twisted in the sense that I don't want to misconstrue anybody to look at that as me glorifying it or even, you know, yeah. seeing it as something positive because it's
or
not
to,
positive.
To use it to seek their own rock bottom, basically.
Exactly.
That was
my path. You're right.
Yeah.
But it didn't kill me, but yeah. it got me to my bottom so fast. And honestly, the thing that got me, March 2nd, 2006, I called my mom and dad and said, I want to come home.
Yeah.
That phone call was the burden of not making that call and wanting to make it every single day for 2.5, 3 years
mm-hmm.
was very heavy.
How did it feel?
Like like in that moment, the weight was lifted.
Yeah.
And honestly, like for me, that was the moment where God, my higher power, the creator, the universe,
yeah.
communicated with me in a very direct way and told me, it's okay. It's okay. You can go home.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, going home was literally coming back to Saskatoon to face my demons.
Yeah.
And who were these demons? Self-constructed demons. Who were the closest people in my life, my family?
You know, I say that same. I actually wrote a song about it. And one of the lines in the song, it's called Make Believe. And one of the lines in the song goes, my demons wear your face because they just love fucking with me.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my demons, they wore Donna's face for a long time. As you witnessed, I was so angry. I was so angry, but it wasn't even at her.
Mm.
You know, and I go into depth. I wish I could just whip it out and play it for you right now, actually. But
yeah.
I'm so rusty.
I remember that song, actually. Yeah, I think I do. I remember you writing a song
yeah.
a couple years into recovery, maybe, but
yeah,
I remember
yeah.
you sharing it with me.
Okay.
I don't remember the details of the song, but I remember you telling me about that song that
yeah.
you wrote. Yeah.
It's very possible, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I would play for anyone who'd listen.
Yeah, no. I totally, I remember.
Yeah.
I remember you sharing that song.
So, but just all to say is that I can relate to what you're saying about, you know, your self-constructed demons. So how did you come to face that then?
Well, I didn't know how I was going to face it. Like I told you initially, March 2nd, there was a voice that said, it's okay. You can go home.
Yeah.
You can go home. And, you know, in a very real way, I ended up in a church.
Uh-huh.
First of all, I was in remand about 3 weeks before that. Okay. In Medicine Hat.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time being arrested over and over and over, I said to myself, I cannot get out of here and keep doing what I'm doing. Every other time that I'd been in remand, which was probably 5 or 6 times, I was consumed wholly,
mm-hmm.
24/7 with the thought and idea of getting out so I could smoke crack.
Yeah.
Like that's all I thought about. Mm-hmm. And of course, coupled with the misery, the shame, the loneliness, the guilt, which you're trying to shove to the side.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to feel like that. And that's what was really going on. I can't wait till I can not feel like this anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so when I was in Medicine Hat, I thought, you know, I wholeheartedly, my spirit said, you can't keep doing this.
Yeah.
And the idea of leaving, getting out, and not using started becoming strong.
Mm.
And a conviction started to set in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to go to mass because you're on lockdown 23 hours a day.
So hang on a sec before we go. Were you a religious person before this awakening?
I was raised Roman Catholic.
Uh-huh.
Went to a Catholic boys school in Nairobi when I was young.
Okay.
Went to a Catholic St. Matthew's Elementary in Saskatoon.
Mm-hmm.
Went to church all the time. Grew up with the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
My mom's very religious.
Mm-hmm.
But I went away from that religion.
Mm.
I sprinted as soon as I could away from Catholicism.
Yeah.
And I have nothing against religion.
Yeah.
I have nothing. Like my mom's faith in her God and her spiritual relationship is very powerful. Mm-hmm. And her prayers kept me safe for years.
So you don't consider yourself a Christian then?
No.
No.
Okay. No. No.
Mm-hmm.
No. So I went to Mass.
Okay.
And I hadn't been to church apart from weddings and funerals.
Mm-hmm.
Probably for a solid 10 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
So the first Sunday, I'm like, this is bad for my street cred. There's a bunch of bad guys that I know that are in here. It's not going to look good for me to go. So I didn't go.
They're in there too.
Oh, yeah. They're in jail. They're in jail.
Bunch sorry. I thought you meant in Mass.
No. I'm in remand.
Okay.
So I want to go to church.
Right,
I want
to go
to Mass on Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm like, nah, I can't do it. So I skip the first Sunday.
Okay.
The second Sunday, I decide to go.
Okay.
So something's telling me, something's giving me the push. Doesn't matter what the judgment is, my street cred, you're going to go. So I go.
Mm-hmm.
And the sermon is on a story from the Old Testament called The Prodigal Son.
Mm.
And it's a story that I knew very well
mm-hmm.
from growing up, being a Catholic, you know, and going to church. It's an old story from the Old Testament about two brothers, an older one and a younger one. The younger one's a total party animal, addict, alcoholic, probably like me,
mm-hmm.
who demands his inheritance while his parents are still alive
mm-hmm.
and goes all over the world and blows it
mm-hmm.
and hits his bottom and comes begging. And he's lost for years. And obviously his parents and pray for him for his return to come home.
Mm-hmm.
So he decides to go home when he's got nowhere left to go. And his dad, upon finding out that he's coming home, instructs the older son, who's been a really good son, who's stayed there and served his family, instructs him to get ready to throw a feast and to slaughter the biggest and fattest animal because his brother's coming home. And the older brother can't get it. He's like, what?
Yeah.
After all he's put us through, you want to throw a party and a celebration for this selfish, destructive,
mm-hmm.
unfaithful son? And his father told him yes. So he welcomed him, right? He welcomed him with open arms. And in spite of anything he had done and what he'd subjected his family to,
yeah,
he was welcome home. And so that was the Mass. That was the Mass when I went to that.
Mm-hmm.
It was the sermon was on that. I was on that story. And it hit me. It floored me. And I think that was the moment where I knew, okay.
Did you have that release? Did you cry?
Well, I cried. I cried like a baby for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm in remand, can't show it.
Yeah.
But I think I knew at that point, God was telling me, it's okay, you can go home. So I ended up getting out of there maybe a week and a half later
mm-hmm.
and convinced to my deepest core that I wasn't going to use.
Mm-hmm.
And I had nowhere to go because I was homeless. And I stayed with an ex-girlfriend for 5 days and then I relapsed. For about 4 or 5 days. And then March 2nd, mm-hmm. I called my mom and dad and said, I want to come home.
So I don't think that you quite finished that story talking about the prodigal son. He was welcomed home to a feast and then what?
Well, I mean, I didn't finish it because like that story there, that part of it was the one that was pertinent to my story because my shame and guilt would not allow me to take that first step.
Mm-hmm.
To surrender,
mm-hmm.
to ask for help,
mm-hmm.
to face my family who I knew I had hurt so much.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the Christmas before, I had gotten on a bus in Calgary
mm-hmm.
at midnight. My cousin had picked me up and I told my dad I was coming home.
Mm-hmm.
And just before the bus pulled out of the old Greyhound station in Calgary, my dad was going to pick me up in Saskatoon at 6:30 or 7 in the morning. I hopped off the bus because I could not, the cravings and I had to use. But I think now, knowing what I know, it was that shame and the guilt.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't ready to face it. And that was a few months before I came home.
Isn't that interesting? What if the obsession isn't about using? What if the obsession is just wanting to feel better?
And that's it.
Yeah.
Because that was the solution, right? Because I think that's why we relate so much as addicts, especially in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
When we go into a room for the first time, we can relate to the feelings.
Yeah.
I don't have to explain to you what it feels like and what you're trying not to feel.
Yeah.
You get it. Yeah. Right? And you nailed it. You just nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really about the using. Yeah. It was about not facing life.
Yeah.
Not facing myself.
So how long did it take for your life to stop being about just staying sober and start being about what can I do with this?
Almost initially, bro.
Okay.
Like I knew I was done. I knew I was done.
Yeah.
I just knew I was done. But there's no track record of knowing that that's going to be something. Like I didn't know I would be sitting here today 18 years clean.
Yeah.
But I had one reservation going in.
Yeah.
One reservation. One preconceived idea. I thought I'm going to go to treatment for 28 days.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop smoking crack cocaine.
Yeah.
And then I know I'll be able to drink.
Oh god.
I'll be able to smoke marijuana.
Oh wow, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
I don't blame you for thinking you could do that.
but wholeheartedly, that's what I thought.
Well, of course.
I thought I'll be able to do the odd bump, maybe a little X once in a while, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Just got to get this crack under control.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was in Calder. I believe it was during the first week. And we were doing an exercise in group called the triangle of basically. So it was the triangle. At the bottom on one side was the beginning, the first time you used. It had all these markers and questions as you went up to the top, which was the climax, the height of the party,
mm-hmm.
and then the down to your bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So all these questions, when did you start lying? When did this interfere with work? When did this, you know, all these markers, when did you just... to the peak of the party, and then all the stuff at the bottom.
Okay.
And somewhere during doing that exercise, I came to understand that it has nothing to do with a substance. I had to give all of it up.
Mm-hmm.
That was a true moment of acceptance. It happened in Calder during that exercise that, oh my God.
The substance was the solution, not the problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I cannot use anything, mood or mind altering.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just cannot. And so that reservation had existed, but it was taken out quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so honestly.
Hang on out.
Yeah.
Were you sad? Did you grieve?
Nope.
You didn't grieve the loss of that?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope, I didn't.
Was it scary?
A bit.
Mm-hmm.
A bit for sure. Again, I can't give you the answer of why. We're all a little bit different when it comes to how certain things sink in or make sense or don't make sense or mm-hmm. stick or don't stick.
Mm-hmm.
There's different factors. But going into recovery after getting out of treatment, having fully accepted, okay, I can't go back to any of it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I think there was a freedom in that.
Yeah.
There was a freedom in understanding that, because that is a fact that a lot of addicts and alcoholics coming into recovery do not get immediately. So there was a lot of freedom that idea sunk in, that I understood it.
Well, it's such a limiting idea, you know, and we can't see past it. So as soon as that veil drops, and it comes back up again in different ways, right? Like it does. But when it drops and that weight comes off. And that's what I often ask people when they find that acceptance. The moment they find that acceptance, did a weight come on or did a weight come off?
I think I would say a weight came off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there was a sense of freedom that I probably didn't understand
mm-hmm.
to what degree,
mm-hmm.
to this, you know, to the severity of that freedom
mm-hmm.
and its effect on me and my life moving forward. But witnessing the difficulty of that fact, not sticking for so many that I've walked on this journey with.
That's where the weight comes on. Yeah, man.
Right. So that was the one single reservation. And I almost used once, about 2 months clean.
Yeah.
And I put myself in a situation, sexually motivated.
Yeah.
Where someone offered me a woman, crack pipe with ready to go. And I got a vision of my mom and got out of there.
Wow. Yeah. That'll shut you off. Hey.
And yeah. And that's the only time. That's the only time.
Yeah.
And honestly, bro, like, you know, often you'll hear it in meetings. People will talk about, you know, they'll drive past a patio on a hot summer day and the idea comes to them, man, it would be nice to have one.
Yeah. Yeah.
What happens for me, for example, when I'm driving down 17th Avenue Southwest in Calgary and it's a beautiful hot summer day and there's hundreds and thousands of people drinking and having a beer in the sun or whatever they're having.
And having fun.
Yeah. For me.
Yeah.
It's what comes in is, thank God, A, I'm not wasting my time. Yeah. I wasted so much precious time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wasted so much time.
Yeah.
Doing that, destroying myself. And two, it's boring.
Yeah.
Even if I could do it, and this is 100% truth for me.
Yeah.
Even if I could do it, I wouldn't do it because it's boring. It's the same old shit over and over and over and over. For me, it's boring.
And but when we're in it though, it feels productive.
But I'm coming from a position where I'm not in it.
Well, no, and I get that, but like I get that feeling here, even in Saskatoon. Like it's not hundreds of thousands of people, but like I'll drive past a nightclub. Or I'll drive past or just a little while ago, there's a pub up the street here and I drove past it in the middle of a Saturday afternoon and there's two people standing outside smoking. And I'm like, man. And like, and I don't want to cast judgment on anyone, right? Like, you can do that. That's amazing. Like, I just can't. But that made me remember myself doing that, sitting outside on waiting for the liquor store to open at 10 a.m. or something like that, you know, and it just triggered that feeling. And it's a gross feeling, but there's a gratitude attached to that.
Big time.
You know?
Big time.
So it's like we need that dark to bring in, to let the light shine in, you know? So, and like this morning, there was a big glitch on Facebook. Facebook shut down.
Yep.
Right? And to me, I mean, Facebook has been a problem for me. And now that I'm using Facebook to promote what we're doing right in this moment, right, it's become a very important part of the business and important to carry the message. And it went down this morning and I thought I got hacked. And like, that's 3 years of work that I've put into this page. That's a big deal to me.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I can't, it just is. That's a fact. But there's also there was also a weird feeling of freedom in that if that's gone, I'm free.
But also, I don't have to know this, but I know this about you. Mm-hmm. But even if it did get hacked and you lost everything you've done in 3 years, I know you'd be okay.
I know I would too. I know I would too, because I've been through and I've crossed enough finish lines and been down, knocked down enough times in my recovery to know that the gift is in the struggle.
And you don't know what else is opening.
No, that's just it.
Because this is part of your purpose.
Yeah.
And something completely out of your power.
Yeah.
To control whether Facebook shuts down or not is not something that you're in charge of.
Yeah.
I'm sure it would knock you off your stride for this morning. Maybe we wouldn't have gotten to sit here and do this.
Oh, we would have.
Like, well, okay. Yeah. Okay.
I'd have been a different story, but.
Exactly, right? Yeah. But I know you wouldn't have gone to drink over it.
No. No. No.
I know you wouldn't have thought, I need to get high to deal with this shit.
Yeah.
No. I know you wouldn't. I wouldn't have been walking into a situation where you're a raging madman losing his mind.
Yeah. Well, I might be.
It's a possibility.
I might be raging a little bit, but more like shut down, more like just trying to recenter, you know, like I can't deal with this. I have to go here. You know, that's kind of how it gets for me sometimes when it gets really bad. And the breath, return to the breath.
100%.
Yeah.
The reality is, it's not like you're not made of metal.
No.
It will affect you.
Yes.
But how you deal with it and how you react to it will be a far different cry than the Dan that I knew in 2017 when you came in.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
If that had happened now.
Yeah. Where's the lesson? Where's the gift? Yeah. Where's the sign? Where's the new thing?
And acceptance.
Yeah.
The answer to all our problems.
Yeah. You know, I had a guy contest that one time. You know, there's that saying in the program, page 417. Yeah. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems. And he said, if that was the case, I'd still be smoking crack. What do you think about that?
That's pretty twisted.
It kind of is. But he was really a gifted speaker. So when he said that and he explained it to me, like, look, if I was just to be a crackhead, like he was swinging off the end of a crack pipe for 30 years. And he's like, if I just accepted that I was a crackhead and that this was going to be my life, I'd still be high. It was in finding that way of, no, I'm not going to accept this. I'm going to change this.
Well, acceptance.
Change the things we can.
Acceptance is the answer to all our problems. There's a lot of things in life that are not acceptable.
Yeah, I agree.
being hopelessly chained and completely powerless to use crack cocaine or anything else against my will day after day, moment after moment is not acceptable.
Yeah.
And once I have an opportunity to step out of that prison and live a life of freedom.
Mm-hmm. Change the things we can.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Mm-hmm. I have that tattooed on my arm.
Have you ever heard the short form of the Serenity Prayer?
Give it to me.
Ready?
Yeah.
Fuck it. Amen.
I get it. I get it. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
Right? At a certain point, I could not change the fact that I was living in active addiction. I could not stop drinking. I could not stop using. Mm-hmm. I could not stop being selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, self-willed. Mm-hmm. I could not do it. I could tell myself over and over and over, I'm not going to do this again tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I had no power.
Yeah.
I could not change it. Mm-hmm. That's powerlessness. There was no choice. People, you know, when people talk about, oh, my drug of choice.
Yeah.
There's no drug of choice. It's a drug of no choice.
Mm-hmm.
There was never choice in the matter.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the first one.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But near the end?
Yeah.
There was no choice.
Yeah.
That was gone.
The way I like to see it is it certainly did not feel like there was a choice. You
Bro,
know?
We were I could not stop blind. Smoking crack.
Yeah.
Could not do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
In every miserable situation that I found myself day in and day out, I knew deep down, this wasn't the life I was supposed to have. I'm not supposed to be here. This is not the person I was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I was totally powerless not to do anything about it. But from the moment of surrender, from coming into recovery, and this is very much connected to the anonymous programs.
Mm-hmm.
This point is very valid to the anonymous 12-step groups that are in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Once I got there, I knew there was a different way.
Yeah.
And I became responsible for my recovery.
Yeah.
And I had an army to help me with it.
Yeah.
So today, it's a choice. You can choose to go to the liquor store. You know where every single...
At any point, man.
You can call a drug dealer.
Stans is right there.
And I can do the same thing.
Yeah.
But we wake up every day and we actually choose not to.
Yeah. You know, and I don't know if that's how I see it necessarily. Because I have no desire to drink. It's been taken from me. You know, there's been times where the thought had sort of like, oh, maybe I should. But it's never been to a place where I'm like, no, Dan, don't go to a meeting. Do this. Don't use. Don't drink. You know, but I do wake up every morning and decide to do my best with the day so that I don't have to wake up tomorrow and drink. It's like I'm just a little bit ahead of it. I'm at a place where, you know, like today I am going to get up and I am going to do my best to carry a message in this community. I'm going to do my best to find people to engage with, like yourself, where we can carry a message of hope and foster productive conversations about substance use and recovery.
And that fire needs to be stoked.
Yes.
And that fire needs to be, you need to be throwing wood into that proverbial fire.
Yeah.
Continuously.
Yeah.
So it doesn't die out.
Yeah.
And if you don't keep feeding that fire,
I'll end up somewhere, man.
You're going to end up cold and in a dark place.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I think just to sort of like to counter that point to a degree, after you've been here for a while, the insanity of this disease, I'm sitting here telling you to drink or to use does not enter my mind. I make that choice continuously, and I've made it day to day.
So what does the insanity look
like? The insanity is better men and women than me and whoever else, after freedom and recovery for years, the insanity is that decision will be made. What do you mean? They'll go and pick up. Somebody with 25 years making a decision to pick up a bottle again. That is insane.
Yeah.
Knowing full well, having walked a spiritual path that has fought and been dedicated for day after day, after being connected and doing all those things that we do, you wake up one day and you decide, I'm going to have a drink.
Yeah.
That's the insanity of this disease.
And you've seen it.
Bro.
I've seen it.
Over and over and over and over and over. And that is, I think, really understanding that. Really sort of having a respect, an unwavering knowledge that that is a possibility.
That the wolf's at the door.
Bro.
There comes a point, and it did for me too, and COVID sort of pushed me, where we have to walk outside of our little bubble that we've created. You know, I got into treatment and I created this little recovery bubble and I stayed very well inside of it. You remember I was going to two meetings a day for the first 2 years of my recovery because I didn't know how to live outside of that.
Well, but that's what you had to do. That was your path.
I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying that's
what it was.
Yeah. So what was that like for you? Now, when you, did you have a little bubble where you found safety?
In relation to the pandemic or in general?
No, just in like when you came into the rooms, you found this safe space with like-minded people. Did you just like make this little bubble and stay in it for a while?
Well, yes and no. Okay. So first of all, in the first 365 days out of treatment, I went to 359 meetings. In the first 3 years, probably about 38 sweat lodge ceremonies at John Cuthand's place. He was a spiritual advisor at Calder at the time. So I asked him if I could keep coming after I got out. So over the first 3 years, I would go to his place a lot of Wednesdays. So I was in it. I was very much in the program, you know, with a sponsor, getting involved in service at different levels, had a home group. You know, do all the things that were suggested to do. But also in the first year, I went back to finish a degree that I hadn't finished. December of 2006, I helped open a restaurant. Initially, I was the sous chef. I ended up becoming the executive chef. So there was a lot of parts of my life that I was starting. I was, you know, that drive was finally being exercised
in a productive
and
way.
Implemented into productive areas of my life.
Yeah.
So I had time to make up for.
Yeah.
Because I knew how much time I had wasted.
Yeah.
So no, I didn't like I didn't get into recovery to live in a bubble of recovery.
Yeah.
I got into recovery so I can have a good life.
Yeah.
And recovery, by definition, also means I was getting reconnected to a lot of things that I had lost, being a productive member of society, having an important role in my family, connecting with a lot of my friends that I grew up with, that weren't addicts and alcoholics, that always had my best interest at heart.
Yeah. Did it feel like you stepped out of a time warp?
Yes.
Yeah.
A time warp that was constructed, you know, the walls of that time warp were shame and guilt.
I hear you, man. I did that same thing. I come out of that. There was 8 years where it got really dark for me and for Donna. And when I came out of that, all of the people that were around me, they had homes, they had wives or husbands and they had careers. And it just, honestly, like very early on, I'm like, man, it feels like I stepped out of a time warp. Everyone's still here doing things and I was gone.
Right.
Yeah.
So no. And, you know, to this day now, especially presently, And like I said, you know, we all have a different path, you know. Not everybody has an amazing family to come that they come from.
Yeah.
I got to live with my mom and dad at the age of 34 for a full year. How many addicts have that support? Right? I know a lot that don't, that come from years or generational trauma.
Yeah.
And addiction and alcoholism. So everybody's story is different. I had a a decent degree, level of education.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I'm always grateful for every day, I thank my higher power. I'm super grateful that my brain still works,
mm-hmm.
that my eyes work, that I wasn't physically impaired by my addiction, because I cheated death many times.
Yeah.
And so all those things have given me a capacity to rebuild my life in all areas. Mm-hmm. And I have relationships, dude, outside of the rooms, probably, you know, just as meaningful as the relationships in the rooms. Yeah. But I didn't come into recovery to live in a bubble of 12-step recovery.
Yeah.
It's a central part of my life.
Yeah.
Without it being the pinwheel,
yeah,
everything falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
But dude, no. And for me, that's a blessing, because that's not the reality for everybody.
Yeah.
Some people don't have, like I said.
Some people seem to, that's their life, and that's.
And that's, hey.
Who are we to say that's wrong? They've exactly. got a message to carry, and there's a good place to carry it.
And more importantly, and I think you can relate to this.
Mm-hmm.
I came here because I was sick and tired of the misery that I had created for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to change my life.
Mm-hmm.
And AA was never part of the picture. AA was never part of the picture. CA was never part of the picture. Nothing 12-step rooms. I thought I was going to go to treatment. That was it.
Mm-hmm. Cured.
But Narcotics Anonymous has been the biggest one for me.
Mm-hmm.
90% of my recovery has been based in that fellowship,
mm-hmm.
and I'll be forever grateful. And God willing, I'll continue to be of service to those that come after me.
Yeah,
I came here, and so there was an army of people that helped me change, that gave me the 12 steps, which have the spiritual mechanics to create meaningful change in who I am as a human being,
mm-hmm.
to reconnect me with who I was always meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found purpose. I didn't come here looking for purpose, bro. I came here for selfish reasons.
Yeah. You wanted to feel better.
Yeah.
Same thing. Same old story.
And now I'm better at feeling.
Yeah.
And a byproduct is that I get to be of service. Bro, people used to say, and I'll this point.
Yeah.
Stay away from Daniel Petros.
Who said that?
Many.
Like in the program?
No, outside, before I got into recovery.
Yeah.
Stay away from him. He's a bad dude.
Yeah.
And they were right. Fast forward, living in recovery today,
mm-hmm.
today, somebody called me to ask somebody that is connected to their family that is struggling with addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So to be part of the solution, maybe that's the purpose for and that's enough, and it's massive, mm-hmm. for certain people,
mm-hmm.
who end up getting into recovery.
Mm-hmm. Take a quick break here. Yep. I am just going to read off
some more
sponsor.
Chats. Do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
No. So if you are a professional wishing to deepen your understanding of substance use disorder, check out the AIMS SK program through the College of Medicine at the University of Saskatchewan, designed to help you improve health outcomes for individuals with substance use disorder. If you are interested in fostering productive conversations about substance use in your community, organization, or event, shoot me an email at daniel@hardknockstalks.com to learn more about our public speaking options. We are getting calls.
Amazing.
People are wanting us to come and share in their communities.
Dude,
and,
right?
Yeah, it's amazing.
And did you, is that what you came here for?
No, I'm a welder. I didn't come here for any of this.
Right.
You know, but you said something before. I said you wanted to feel better. And then you said you learned how to.
I got better at feeling. I got better at feeling.
Yeah, that's a meme right there, man. That's beautiful. And like, that's just my like click.
yeah, so, bro. Like today I embrace all of it, the feelings,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
If I'm feeling lonely, I embrace it.
I'm better at feeling.
If I feel heart, I'm grateful for heartbreak, bro.
You know, I get it.
Right?
Yeah.
I think running away from emotions, not feeling, numbing them for 20 years. And then obviously, you know, we get into recovery and a lot of times a lot of feelings come up that we've buried for years. And very often you'll hear, I'm feeling messed up. Or I'm crying,
mm-hmm.
bawling like a baby, or I don't understand all these feelings that are welling up in me.
Mm-hmm.
You hear that a lot in early recovery, especially. And I mean, when I mean early, I mean in the first 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've come to understand is there's an analogy that I use that we emotionally defrost. All that stuff we buried for years has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Right? We've shoved it in the deep freezer and the freon is all the substance. All of a sudden, the substance, you stop putting the substances in and you're starting to live in recovery and doing the work and digging deep and shining light in all the dark places. Mm-hmm. Those buried emotions start coming. And it takes time to understand.
Man, I'm 7 years in and stuff comes up still, you know?
Right.
And I've worked through it. Actually, I work with a shaman from time to time.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the stuff will come up that I thought was long gone and all of a sudden, whoa. Like, I got to sit the hell down, man. This is going to fuck up my day if I don't get on top of this.
But you can recognize it.
Yeah.
You can sit in it. You don't have to numb it. You're not running away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of it, when we talk about, I've gotten better at feeling, being able to experience joy, despair, sadness, exuberance, all of it, the good and the bad.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that's the measure of the depth of my experience as a human being.
Do you ever think you'll be recovered?
No.
So, because there's that age-old debate, right? And I think the one was it. The
I
first?
Love this question, by the way.
Good, good, and we can talk about it. There's no time limit on us today. So, the old big book says, helped 100 men and women recover. I forget exactly what
it
said.
From a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body.
So, but I like to reflect on that. And I kind of tend to think that perhaps we will be, or I will be, or I am recovered from my substance use disorder. Now, wait, at what point? Because I got all this stuff now. I ain't never had any of this before. I didn't have this way of thinking before. I didn't have this way of living before. Like, how can I recover something I've never had?
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
So, I think at some point, for me personally, the way I understand it in this moment is like, at some point, recovery ends and discovery begins. And, you know, and like now I'm not a person in recovery. I'm a person learning to walk in the human condition.
Okay. Well, listen, I don't think those two things have to be mutually exclusive. Okay. Living in recovery and living in discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Because first of all, from the minute you take the first step into recovery, you're living in discovery.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The book talks about, the big book calls this a spiritual malady.
Oh?
It talks about alcoholism. And I'll say addiction as a spiritual malady, as a spiritual illness.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about, and you know, we were taught and in the rooms that there's a spiritual solution. The programs are not religious, they're spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for me anyways, there's a set of spiritual mechanics at work in each of the 12 steps that help me dig deep. Mm-hmm. Identify, do inventory, find a template for moving forward, consistently seeking outside counsel because I'll forever be blinded by my own perspective. That was my problem anyways. I could never see outside of myself.
Yeah.
So it takes vision from others to influence change in me.
Yeah.
And what am I trying to recover? Every single one of us was born a blank slate, a beautiful little baby.
Yeah.
Came into this world unpolluted, untouched. And there's a phrase in Latin, tabula rasa, blank slate. And we just absorb and absorb and absorb. So we're very much defined and affected by our environment, our experiences growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So if the beginning, for me, I never had dreams of being an addict. I never had dreams of being in a homeless, hopeless dope fiend.
Mm-hmm.
I had visions of a good life based on the values in the family that I come from and the different societies that have shaped me. So the biggest loss was myself, that true essence of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And there was don't want to get too psychological about it, but there was a construction of a false identity all along the way. I lost myself.
Mm-hmm.
So recovery, what am I recovering? In essence,
who blank slate.
Well, who I'm destined to be, my true essence. We know you hear about tapping into the inner child. Mm-hmm. There's lots of different terms. Mm-hmm. But in essence, I'm recovering who I'm supposed to be, my spirit. Mm-hmm. So whether an addict or not, to have the gift of living in a spiritual way, mm-hmm. with recognizable and identifiable and acceptable spiritual tools, I'm speaking for myself. Mm-hmm. That's a process that has no beginning or end. It in a way, in recovery, there's a beginning.
Yeah.
But it doesn't end. So where I have, for me anyways, a little bit of trepidation when people who identify, I'm a recovered alcoholic, I'm a recovered addict, there's a finality to that. Mm-hmm. The work is done. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm an addict in recovery. And I'm not identifying as an addict anymore in the sense that is for in the rooms, there's anonymity, the spiritual principle of all the founding principle of all our traditions. And that's about placing principles before personalities and most notably getting my personality out of the way.
Unpack that.
I will in a second. So that work doesn't stop. If I say I'm a recovered addict, okay, I'm recovered. What happens if I pick up in 5 years? Mm. What if I pick up tomorrow? Mm-hmm. And I've seen, and I'm not the only one, many individuals who identify, so they're very in a very determined fashion that state that they are a recovered alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And then at some point they're drunk. Mm-hmm. That's the only sort of like for me, for myself, and this is for me. And if I'm working with others, this is also a philosophy that I believe in and a truth that I hold. The process of recovery or discovery, expanding your life, the possibilities becoming greater, mm-hmm. will always continue. For me, there's a little bit of a lack of humility in myself identifying as I'm recovered because it means the work is done. Hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a warning, and simply because I've told you before, many a man and woman that I've known and have close relationships with mm-hmm. in recovery, I'm recovered. Mm-hmm. They're high and drunk at some point, mm-hmm. or they're dead. Recovered. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a spiritual cautionary
way of
position.
Thinking. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. But with what was the point you asked me to unpack?
Getting your own personality
out of the way.
Yeah.
So when we identify, you know, I have some friends who will say to me, well, you know, that have moved away from the program.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like the program because I have to identify as an addict or an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And it's not for me anymore because I'm not like that anymore. Mm-hmm. The reason we identify that way is A, because it's true for us, but two, it's about anonymity. When I go into the rooms, it doesn't matter who I am, where I come from, mm-hmm. what I have,
how much or how little we have.
My connections are. None of it matters.
Yeah.
None of it matters.
Yeah.
We walk into a room, bro, lawyer, homeless guy that came in. Guy from prison, mm-hmm.
Leave your archetypes at the door.
Bro, all of it. Mm-hmm. Leave it at the door. And honestly, it's one of the few places in this world. Mm-hmm. If you think about the amount of division and everything has to be defined and labeled in this world that we live in.
Yeah.
A lot of it is purposely constructed. When I walk into a room, a 12-step room, all of it's left at the door.
Yeah. Guns at the door.
All of it is left at the door.
Yeah.
All of it, we're equal. Mm-hmm. You're just an individual trying to find a solution. Mm-hmm. And there's like-minded people there. Done. Mm-hmm. You know, so and when we were talking about the 12th tradition, principles before personalities, right? Mm-hmm. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. What are the principles we're talking about? Honesty. open-mindedness, willingness, generosity, humility, compassion, empathy, understanding, goodwill, being there for another person. There's many of them, lots of spiritual principles. And the entire objective of me doing 12-step work was to get rid, remove, to obliterate that selfish, self-centered, self-wit personality that was at the core of my disease, right? That was the core of my problem. So if I'm trying to undergo a spiritual and psychic change, but my personality's there in front of all these principles, it's impossible. The two things cannot happen. So anonymity has taken on a very different meaning. Because in the beginning, and you can't blame anybody for having this perspective, it's like, oh, it's about not knowing or saying that this person's in a 12-step room. You can't talk. I can't say, oh, I know Daniel Hearn. If I'm on the street and somebody says, how do you know Daniel Hearn?
Yeah.
Oh, I met him in Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah.
I can't say that.
No.
Right? I have to protect your anonymity. But that's the base level.
Yeah.
What are we really talking about? Principles before personalities. Mm-hmm. Get your goddamn personality out of the way, Daniel Petros. And put these principles first so you can be part of an effective part of the solution, not the problem. Mm. Because if I impose my personality and I have a strong one.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's not saying.
And I'm not saying that in a slanderous way at
all.
No. When Daniel's in the room, you know it.
Right? So I have to be really, that's work. That's why part of that work has to continue.
Yeah.
Because that never goes away completely.
Well, that's not a bad thing either.
It's not a bad thing either, no.
Yeah, I'm not trying to say it's a bad thing.
No, I know you're not. It's good. I know. We understand each other.
Yeah.
But if that personality stands before everything else, dude, there's also lots of principles that come with that personality.
Yeah. That's why I named my Facebook name, Daniel Unmanageable. It's been that way for 3 years now.
There you go.
More than that.
Yeah.
4 years. I did that as a sort of a slight of that way of thinking, like just as it was talked about, I said, you know, when Daniel's in the room, and if someone who just walked into the conversation might think I was taking a slight at you, right?
Yes.
But that's not it, because I was told at one point in my recovery that I'm trying to be all loud and boisterous, and that's ego, and you need to stomp that out. So I'm like, I don't think that's true. I have a gift. I'm good at carrying a message. I'm good at with my words. So there's
humility in expressing that.
Yeah. So, I took this persona that was deemed egotistical. I named it Daniel Unmanageable. And I said, you have to do good in this world. And I turned it loose. That's where that name came from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And listen, like when we do inventory, step four, a searching and fearless moral inventory.
Mm-hmm.
And you've heard it quite often. Oh, it's so fearful. Yeah. There's so much fear going. It's so hard to do. Bro, there's also a positive part of you that you have to inventory.
Yeah, yeah. And scarier not to.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm not entirely bad person. Mm-hmm. There's good to me and there's bad just like anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I have good leadership skills. I can communicate effectively. Mm-hmm. I can carry a message of strength and hope that was given to me.
Mm-hmm.
I have a good mind that works. Where am I using it and how I'm using it are important.
Mm-hmm.
I have a heart that has compassion for my fellow human beings in and outside of the rooms. There's nothing egotistical about expressing this.
Yeah.
I'm willing to be of service to another human being today more than I've ever been in my life.
Mm-hmm.
There's no ego in that. That's humility. Humility is having a right-sized perspective of who I am today. Thinking of myself as a complete piece of shit all the time is also egotistical.
Yeah.
It's the false side of pride. Right? And so being able to express these things and having an honest conversation, you know quite a bit about me from your time coming into the room, from our interaction in the rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I know quite a bit about you from the time that you came in. And also, we've had some distance as far as regular interaction.
Mm-hmm.
But even without a direct link or direct source of information and knowledge, the fact is our spirits and the way we live our lives communicate for us.
Mm-hmm. If there's someone out there struggling right now, happening to hear this, what would you say?
Yeah, and that's why we're doing this. So honestly, there's not a mountain that's insurmountable. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do it alone. Mm-hmm. Especially addict or no addict. But I'll speak to addicts and alcoholics in particular. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is ask for help. Right? The disease will tell you, nope. You've done too much bad.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that judgment comes in internally, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, knowing my story, knowing your story, and knowing thousands of other stories, just talk to somebody. Let somebody in.
Mm-hmm.
Ask for help. And as we say, bro, in the program, we talk about how. If you can be honest with yourself that you got a problem and you need help, you can be open-minded about allowing others to influence your decision-making process,
mm-hmm.
and you're willing to take direction, anything is possible.
Be bold and mighty forces will come to your aid.
Be humble.
Mm-hmm.
Be humble enough to know that you're done. Surrender.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the transformation that can take place for an individual, the ripple effects are many. When we heal, our loved ones heal.
Mm-hmm. Our community heals.
Our community heals,
mm-hmm.
right? We're no longer a part of the problem. We're part of the solution. And, you know, we people talk about trying to change the world.
Yeah.
This circle right here. Mm-hmm. I can work from there and let the chips fall where they may.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
That was awesome. That's it. Take care for now.
Ciao.
All right. If you got something out of that, please hit that subscribe button at the bottom of the screen. Turn on notifications. We're going live all the time on YouTube. If you don't have time to watch us on YouTube, you can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. That's all I got for now. Take care, everyone.
Say, this is Hard Knocks Talks.
We're done?
Clear.
Whew.